There are stars in the southern sky. Southward as you go. There is moonlight and moss in the trees. Down the seven bridges roll.
He's full of wit and not afraid to ask the tough questions. The Drew Marshall Show, right here on Joy 1250, hometown Christian radio for the GTA.
Now I have love. Seven bridges roll.
What a great Eagles song. One of the best. We've got to keep
playing it. There are stars in the southern sky. And if ever you decide you should go, down the seven bridges roll.
You know, the last thing the Eagles need is more harmony from
yes.
us.
From either of us.
Boy, that was good. That was a nice little respite there, Timmy. Thank you for that.
Well, unfortunately, it was done with, you know, the mournful backside of that. Mr. Fry passing away.
Yeah. Did everyone know he was that sick?
No.
It was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah,
it
was. I think he was doing okay, and then I guess things just got progressively worse. It's not like, not to belittle it, it's not like cancer or something like that, but it was a collection of a bunch of different things that unfortunately the pile of them together really did him in.
Can you say the word unfortunately again, please?
Sure, folks.
No, say it.
Sure, folks.
No, say unfortunately.
Unfortunately, folks.
Fortunately. You don't say un, you just say fortunately.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Ooh, I like it.
Unfortunately.
Okay. Well, this is riveting radio, let me tell you. I got to tell you about my experience at the Hare Krishna Temple.
Yes, let's do that.
I went down there last Saturday
mm-hmm.
night after the show, and they had like... Tim, do you remember Young Life or Campus Life and
yes.
all that kind of stuff?
Yep.
So you sit around with guitars and you sing songs and then there's like, you know, little mini message in between kind of thing or whatever. It was a little bit like that. It's inside the temple. You sit on these Persian carpet mats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's chairs around the outside, thankfully, because I got to sit on a chair. Man.
Okay.
And then all the folks sit at the front, the singers. They got a bass guitar, electric guitar, acoustic guitar. They got the
so it's like going to church.
Indian drum. And what else? What's the squeeze thing? They play the keyboard.
Yeah, it's a squeeze box okay. keyboard thing.
Mama plays a
squeeze. Yeah, Daddy it doesn't sleep at night. Yeah, okay.
Okay. And anyway, the music was quite cool, and the vocals were cool. You know how they do that?
Yeah, it's all the quarter tones.
That's
that
it.
Are in
I just call it. So You know how Jesus people complain, you know, the older ones especially, about the new choruses that we would sing?
Oh, yes.
And we wanted hymns,
yes.
Not choruses.
No.
Because they just repeat too much stuff. And repeating. I will never complain about repetition in my life. Two lines of a song in Hindi.
Okay.
And we sang it for 20 minutes.
Wow.
With slow rise to crescendo and then drop down, you know. And Christians have been accused by psychologists of manipulating crowds with that same kind of thing, mm-hmm. You know, repetition. But, you know, these are mantras for these folks.
Yeah.
So you can understand it. But, man, it's, when you got ADD, that's tough to do.
I remember we had, I can't remember who it was or what it was exactly, but it was a female, a woman, women's rights things, and a woman club. But we played this video of these women in this old-looking church room, and they were just doing this circling in and out and in and out and, you know, singing the song. And they just, yeah, I remember you and I just, we sort of sat there like, is this going to change?
Oh.
Are they going to sing something different?
I will never complain about Just As I Am.
Okay.
Ever.
No?
Again. Listen, the music was interesting. It was good. The vocals were beautiful. I just...
Really?
There was a couple
now,
of
was it because it's really a different style of music?
Yeah, just, I guess so.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
And then they blew a sheep's horn.
Oh, okay. The kofar or... You sure that wasn't you? Just squeezing a little extra?
And then the doors opened up, and then there's their gods, right? As statues and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, statues. I thought it was like the Swami dude.
And they're, you know, they're, it's kind of like when the Jews open up the doors and the scrolls are there.
Yep.
It's kind of like a ta-da, except it looked like, you know, they stole some figurines from It's a Small World.
Oh, what?
You know the ride at Disney World?
Oh, yeah.
They stole figurines from that. And
really? Were they animated? Animatronic?
No, they didn't move. That'd be cool. Why can't their gods move?
I'm sure there is some theological.
Anyway, you know, what I found was I can get very judgy.
No.
I can get a little judgy.
You're un-judgy.
I found that after a while, they wore my judgy down.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, so I guess that music repetition worked.
No. It was just, it was like people didn't get, I was the only judgy one there.
All right.
Maybe. And there was a guy there who was kind of special, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
He looked normal and everything, just, you know, a little, and he got long hair, like Brendan, longer hair than Brendan, our intern. And he was clapping, and he was happy the whole time, smiling and everything. And then I realized he was special because he smiled the whole friggin' night.
Right.
You got to be special.
Well, no, not necessarily.
Dude.
I've seen Alex smile the whole time I've been here.
Whatever.
It happened once, but.
I got more pleasure out of watching this guy who was just in his own world, just looking at him going. And I was contrasting this guy who was quote-unquote special with my judgy pants stuff.
Hmm.
Guess who won? Special guy.
Special guy.
I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Well,
anyway, it's a beautiful building, very interesting place. They fed us vegan food at the end at their little restaurant.
Was it like that really good Indian stuff?
Yeah, good stuff, man.
Oh, nice.
And
came for the worship, stayed for the food.
And what else was I going to say? Oh, it's on Avenue Road. It's Chuck Templeton's old church.
Oh, really?
On Avenue Road.
Oh, okay.
That was the biggest church in Canada.
Really?
The most famous, yep. Because Chuck Templeton was like the Billy Graham of Canada. They were pals
right.
and stuff.
Okay.
And Chuck said, I don't believe this anymore.
Yeah. So you and him have something in common.
No,
so nice
I have
there.
Not said that. I've not said that.
Oh, you said you're not sure.
Thank you.
Okay.
Don't you paint me in a corner.
Hey, I don't want to be judgy.
Listen, it's time to move on because that's what we do here on the Drew Marshall Show. All right, it's time for our WTF segment. That stands for Where's the Faith? You want to tune in because this is where I speak with a variety of religion reporters from an assortment of news outlets. And we catch up on the happenings in the world of religion and faith and cults.
Oh, my.
Today's WTF guest, Emma Green, managing editor at The Atlantic. Emma Green is on the line at this particular point in time. Emma, everybody wants to know, since you're... Are you on the East Coast, by the way? Where are you?
I am in Washington, D.C., at the heart of the crazy blizzard.
So is it... What do they call it here up here? Snowmageddon.
Yeah.
Is it as crazy as everyone's saying, or is it just snow?
I mean, you all are in Canada, so you probably aren't as pansy as people in Washington, D.C.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, I stepped in the snowbank and it was up to my knees. So I think that's legit. That's a legitimate amount of snow.
Yeah, it's legit. It's not panic. Like, I don't
not
understand
too
why
legit
I'm so...
to quit.
Really? I don't understand why so many people die in these things. Like, what happens?
Because they don't know how to drive and
they
don't have snow tires.
Do they trip and fall in the snow and suffocate because they're so fat, because they're American, that they can't get up?
Nice. There goes this interview.
Okay.
Hey, I went on a cruise ship with a whole bunch of Americans. Man, they make those boats strong. That's all I'm saying.
And they have to spread them out in the cabins, not all on one side.
Dude, the buffets in those things.
They're awesome. I love them.
The plate that they use, it's not a plate.
I just sat at the buffet. I didn't bother going back to my table.
Goodness. Emma, do you mind if we talk to you for a second?
Sure, go for it.
The insult is still hanging in the air.
Oh, boy, I tell you. All right, listen, you guys are covering some amazing stories, and I want to go right to the legalization of gay marriage in the U.S., right? So that's happened down there, and I guess there are some workplace discrimination cases that are coming up against LGBT people. But it turns out that religiously based workplace discrimination has been fairly rare in U.S. legal history?
Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting phenomenon that's happening right now, which is before gay marriage became legal, gay couples didn't have a lot of reasons to come out to their employers. They could just be gay and, you know, sort of live their private lives at home. Now that many more gay couples are getting married and asking their employers for benefits, spousal benefits like health care, there are many more reasons for clash between employers and employees. And one thing that's come up and that is definitely ahead on the legal horizon in the United States is trying to create protections for particularly people who are fired or mistreated in the workplace because their employers have some sort of religious objection to their homosexuality. But the irony is that there actually haven't been that many cases of this previous to now, and the one case, the one major U.S. court case that has come up related to this happened in the 80s. It was in Minnesota. It was about a sports and health club. And the employers ended up getting faced with a number of different lawsuits related to firing or mistreating employees based on their sexuality, but also based on premarital sex and not having oversight from women, not having oversight from their fathers, for example. Basically not living up to anything that they felt was a biblical standard. So it's interesting to look back in history and see where that case was so many years ago and what that might mean for the future.
Boy, is this your story or one of your people's stories?
This is my story.
What is the thing that's hit you about this the most? You know, as you sit back and think about the research you've done and the stuff behind this whole thing, you know, like I would imagine you sound like you're under 40. Would I be accurate in saying that?
A woman never shares her age.
Right. But I'm going to go safe. You know, you're under 40. Actually, you sound like you're under 30. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, with your age group, your demographic, what you've been exposed to, what strikes you as odd? Not odd, but what strikes you about this story?
Well, I think one thing that really stands out to me is the pain that takes place on both sides. And we see this a lot now in the case of religious people who have objections to homosexuality, feeling themselves become a cultural minority, feeling a little bit like the government is coming after them and not privileging their religious beliefs. And the woman I talked to, who is the daughter of one of the defendants in this case, she definitely still felt that pain. Her family still felt that pain. Her brothers and sisters still felt that pain. And then on the other side, there's an immense amount of pain. And I think you can't underestimate or understate the staying power of discrimination as a harm. So you can go to court. You can get money back for being fired. You can, you know, have justice served. But not only is that process painful, the pain of being discriminated against, of being told that your lifestyle, your love, your relationship is not acceptable to your employer, that sticks with you. Yeah. And that was something that really came out to me in talking to people for this story.
Well, speaking of discrimination, even the polygamists are discriminating these days. Tell us about that story.
So there's a big trial that started this week against two towns, one in Utah and one in Arizona, where the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Fundamentalist Mormons basically, have set up shop. And they're basically the biggest group in town. They're polygamists. They're an offshoot from the Mormon Church. They broke from the Mormon Church when polygamy became outlawed from the church. And the big case is about whether or not they've been denying public accommodations for people who are not part of their church. Some of the stories that have come out during this case are wild, and it's been very difficult for reporters to get a good eye into what's happening in the town before now because the communities have been very suspicious of outsiders. But there are stories coming out about whole teams of police officers or marshals who sort of monitored the city and collaborated with the government and owned the utilities companies to all sort of collaborate together to make sure that outsiders stayed away.
Wow. Well, that you'd never think that the polygamists would be in trouble for discrimination, eh?
Yeah.
Hey, would you think that, Tim?
Well, you know, they're polygamists, and I guess it wouldn't be bigamy if I didn't, you know.
Really?
Let
them. You're such a tool. Unbelievable.
Sorry.
What do you know about Canada, Emma? Because I think in Canada, you know, our Catholic clerics have been maybe getting into trouble a little bit.
What do I know about Canada? Well, that is a question for another time that I won't expose here. But on this specific count, there has been a controversy that has come up in Alberta recently. There were state-issued guidelines about how to deal with transgender students and particularly how they should be treated in terms of the bathrooms that they're able to use. This is something that often comes up in cases with schools and transgender students. But the Catholic clerics who are in Calgary have pushed back against these state-issued guidelines, saying that they, you know, in essence, undermine God-given sexuality and God-given gender identity as man and woman, as a girl or a boy. And so there's all of this tangling that's going on between the state government and the Catholic clergy, but it's pretty complicated because the Catholic schools there actually do get state funding. And so there's this sort of question about how much should their religious faith and beliefs be able to set bright lines about what they're able to teach in their schools and how they're able to treat their students versus how much control should the state have about determining things like where students can go to the bathroom.
Wow. You know, it was one of the first sort of reactionary, not arguments, but reactionary responses I had with this whole transgender thing. And Tim, you being a teacher, in the public school realm.
And a tree-hugging liberal.
I mean, do you have transgendered bathrooms in your school? Because I remember when this whole thing came out, you know, first started coming out, so to speak, coming out, I went right to the bathroom issue. Is that weird? Is that just a heterosexual phobia, transphobia response?
I think it's C, all of the above. Oh, okay. We don't have any transgendered kid in our school yet. I'm not saying that we don't.
That you know of.
Not that we know of. No one's come out and specifically asked for it. The Peel region, our school region, has a very strong pro-whatever gender kind of thing. So my guess is that would come along at some point. They wouldn't build another bathroom. They just probably convert a staff bathroom or something like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if it
but
came along pretty soon.
Isn't there a handicap bathroom?
Yeah, but the problem
is... Oh, wait, is that a right word? Am I allowed to say that?
No, I believe it's
wheelchair accessible?
Yeah, but I think the
can't
problem is...
Can't they use that one?
But then you run into the problem if there's someone who's wheelchair bound who needs it right away, and there's someone in there who technically doesn't need
what if there's a handicapped person? Oh, I can't even say that.
A transgendered handicapped person?
Shut up. What if there's a wheelchair person in the bathroom and another wheelchair person comes along? They're going to have to wait anyway.
Yeah, but when you start limiting based on your physical rather than your gender, I think that's...
The transgender person is going to say, wait, you calling me handicapped?
I think it's more the concern of the handicapped person not being able to access the bathroom when they need it. When someone who is not necessarily needing it for those reasons, they just take a staff bathroom.
So many issues. I'm glad that the Catholic clerics are taking care of this and I don't have to. On the phone, Emma Green, she is the assistant managing editor at The Atlantic. The website is theatlantic.com. And, of course, you want to follow some of Emma's stories, Emma-Green. Is that still your domain, theatlantic.com/Emma-Green?
That is correct. Hyphen is actually not my legal middle name, but I'm considering getting it changed.
Good. I would suggest that.
Slash is already taken.
Tim, have you... Slash. That's funny. That's good.
It's not too bad.
Tim, do you tithe?
I do,
what
yes.
percentage?
I honestly don't know. I haven't done a calculation. But I give a fair chunk of bucks.
I tithe less than I tip. I tip 15%.
Right.
I tithe 10.
Give or take.
But you know why I tithe 10?
Tell me.
It's not a rule.
It's a suggestion.
It's not a commandment.
No.
But the U.S. Republican presidential candidate, Ted Cruz?
Yes.
How much does he tithe, Emma?
Well, between 2006 and 2010, he gave less than 1% of his income to charity. Now that may be different, but there's been a lot of speculation over the past week that this fact, which has come out recently, may affect the polling that's happening in Iowa. There's a caucus coming up the beginning of February, and Ted Cruz has been angling for the evangelical vote, trying to get conservative Christians to really come out and prop up his campaign. And there's been some speculation that these new revelations that he really didn't give very much of his money to charity for a whole chunk of time may cast doubt on his ability to conform to the faith.
That's funny. I just find this hilarious. Yes. I really do. Because, first of all, you tithe. You don't have to report everything you tithe. You don't have to, you know, it's not all about the tax break. Maybe he secretly tithed. I don't.
Yep.
That's probably not the case, but I don't know. I just thought I'd give him the benefit of
that. But I think it's important that, you know, Sarah Palin, who's being brought in for Donald Trump, has the child that's had two children out of wedlock, and the other child is being arrested for beating people up. So
are
going
you
for the good,
pouncing on no,
they're
the going, Christian soldier
the Christian
Sarah
right.
Palin?
No, I think they're getting some really great people representing the Christian right and getting the conservatives to...
Guess who spoke at Liberty?
Jesus.
Donald Trump. Close.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Emma, tell us about this.
Well, that would be quite a new story if you just showed up at Liberty University, and that would probably be the scoop of the week. But unfortunately, we're just stuck with Donald Trump, who stood before one of the most stalwart conservative Christian universities in the country, which has traditionally been a launching platform for Republican candidates for various offices. Uh-huh. And when he was quoting the Bible, he referred to a passage in 2 Corinthians, and he sort of muddled his way through the quote, you know, is that the one? Is that the passage? But it's an interesting...
Hold on, let me predict what happened. Let me predict. The evangelical Christians went, 2 Corinthians? That's not how you say it, Mr. Trump. It's 2 Corinthians.
Something like that. I think he got a lot of titters from the audience. But, you know, I think it just goes to show that even if he sort of makes a big stink about being a Christian and really caring about his faith, he probably hasn't been to that many Bible study classes, if that's still how he's pronouncing it.
That's funny. I just want to know if he whipped out his gun from his back of his pants, like the president of Liberty did a few weeks ago.
What?
Yeah, the president of Liberty, so Jerry Falwell Jr. or something, I don't know, whatever his name is. He's half the man that Jerry was. Get it?
Ah!
A little thinner.
Yeah.
He went on about, you know, we need to teach them Muslims a lesson and bring them on, bring it or something, you know. I don't know, it was some kind of anti-Muslim thing. And then he said something about, I got a gun right here. I guess I probably shouldn't bring that out. But he talked about his gun tucked into the back of his
really?
Pants.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that.
Right? Isn't that kind of how it went down, Emma? Sort of?
More or less. So it's a roughly good summary. Yeah.
Okay, I'll take care of it. I'll take a roughly good summary
Christians
any day.
Buy our guns.
Buy our guns. They will know we are Christians. Buy our guns. Yeehaw! Emma Green, live on the Drew Marshall Show. Always fun to have you in our WTF segment. Hey, she's the assistant managing editor. No, are you still the assistant managing editor? I thought you were like the president or CEO or something.
Well, they make me not use my title of emperor of the Atlantic.com. I did get a promotion, so I am now officially the managing editor.
Right. Emma, I care about you deeply. I wish you all the best. And don't eat yellow snow.
Thanks for the tip. I will take that very seriously because it came from a comedian.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye, Emma.
Bye.
Bye. Enjoy the storm. Did you say it came from a comedian or a Canadian?
A Canadian. I'm not sure if she's talking about the yellow, so it's sell for the warning.
Oh, man. Stay with us. Who want you? There's something.